is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi. Thank you for joining us today. Embarking on a road trip from London to Lagos presents a multitude of challenges that test both the physical and mental endurance of the traveler and the capabilities of the vehicle. Spanning thousands of kilometers and crossing numerous borders, the epic road trip is not for the faint of heart. But that did not stop Pelumi Nubi, a Nigerian travel content creator who just made history as the first black female to drive solo from London to Lagos. Pelumi tells me that completing the arduous trip required resilience and adaptability to the diverse landscapes and cultures, but that meeting the people along the way made the journey truly unforgettable. Hello, Pelumi. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Voice of America. It's good to see you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so I don't know where you are. but it's a very interesting background that you have over there. What do you say?
I said the life of a traveler, always on the go.
Exactly, always on the move. Anyway, so we're here to talk about your trip that you embarked on, I think, from London to Lagos, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What inspired you to embark on this ambitious journey? And how did you prepare for such a long journey, both mentally and physically?
So, you know, I was born in Lagos, Nigeria, grew up in London. And each time I traveled back, I was just kind of flying back home, flying over this, you know, set of West African countries, especially. And I just got curious, you know. I did a solo drive across Namibia earlier in 2023, which was amazing. Absolutely loved it. And I just thought there was not enough representation within the overland community. You know, you tend to see people that look not like me, you know, group of people, but solo traveling as a black woman just wasn't the norm. Mm. I know that quote, you know, be the change you want to see. So I packed up my bag, I did a lot of research, and I got on the road hoping to inspire other people to step out of their comfort zone and to seek new adventure.
That's a way to step out of your comfort zone. I mean, come on now, driving how many countries, being a trailblazer in this. What challenges did you face along the way and how did you overcome them?
Very good question. So definitely doing this solo, this is an expedition, basically. It's usually by a group of people. You know, you have someone in charge of medical, someone in charge of, you know, the route, someone cooking, someone, you know, actually driving. I have to do all of those roles all at the same time. So juggling multiple hats was definitely challenging. Being solo by myself, but lonely sometimes. The border, you know, West Africa especially, that was definitely a lot of issue, which I highlighted. And even more so, just the sheer pressure of being on the road for so long, you know. It wears you out after a while. I remember having a deep exhale and someone's like, what's wrong? What happened? And I'm like, just driving. It's stressful, you know.
You know, how many hours in totality did you drive?
I don't have exact documents, which is important for something like this next time. I would definitely love to log all this information.
Yeah.
But it was 74 days on the road.
What average hours a day to driving?
I would say about 5 to 6 hours was my average. Mm. Some days there were 10 hours drive. Some days there were 2 hours drive. But I'll say averaged about 5 to 6 hours.
And how did the diverse landscapes and cultures that you encountered along the way influence your perspective around on the world? And can you share some of the most memorable moments or experiences that you had during your travels?
Honestly, this is the joy of travel. You can't even put a price tag on it. Like, there's just so much memories. You can talk about the time I was driving through Morocco and, you know, just seeing the Atlas Mountain and the swirly road and how beautiful. Just, you know, when your vocabulary runs out and you're just screaming, wow, wow, like just absolutely amazing. Driving through the Sahara Desert, one of the most isolated places in the world, and just being by myself and my thoughts, you know, going through the Senegal, St. Louis, by the beach, you know, Gambia, the most amazing beaches I've ever seen in my whole life, trying food in Sierra Leone, and, you know, just having these memories. And honestly, it was the people. The countries were the backdrop, but the people, the story sharing, the shared experience, that I will forever be talking about. Like, my grandchildren will be sick of me at one point, like, okay, grandma.
At least you have stories to tell, you know what I'm saying?
I have stories to tell.
Top that.
Know that quote, you know, traveling leave you speechless, then turn you to a storyteller. I am definitely want to testify of that.
How did you navigate through the different countries and cultures, especially considering the language barriers or cultural differences?
A lot of research pre. So this took a year plus of planning. It wasn't just a spontaneous, let's do it. But I researched a lot of kind of what are the cultural expectations, what are the norms, what especially doing this as a female. There's just certain places that females are expected to behave a certain way. You know, talks to people that have done previous kind of like similar trips to myself. And just really reading up about, you know, keeping up to date with the news and what is going on in those places even before I arrived. But yeah, it took a lot of research. In terms of language, I learned the basic words. Even it's just hello, please help, like just basic vocabularies. And it, smile is a national, is a universal language. You know, if I'm stuck, if I need a bit of help, just approaching with some level of friendliness. I
got that right. Yes.
The smile is the secret weapon.
Were there any unexpected encounters or interactions that, you know, left a lasting impact on you?
You know, you are people just, you know, doing audacious stuff. I remember in France, I wanted to do something spontaneous and I looked at Instagram and I was like, oh, there's this big bridge, you know, one of the longest bridges in the world down in south of France. Let me paraglide across this bridge. It was spontaneous. And I met someone, the instructor was like, okay, I just check the wind. We can do it today. And it was as spontaneous as I can. And I got to learn, like, you know, it was very much in the water activity growing up. And you used to just see people in the sky. And he was so mesmerized by this. And it got him wanting to be part of it. And that's what has become his career now. So just seeing something, I think representation is so important. That's why I've done this road trip. It's kind of like, you know, if for once you want to do this road trip, number one, you can. You've seen a Black woman do it. And even more importantly, if you thought London to Lagos was impossible, now you've seen Pelumi do it. Maybe you can go over your impossible things.
Absolutely. That was actually going to be my next question. As a trailblazer, what message
mind.
Do you hope to convey to other women, especially women of color who aspire to undertake similar adventures?
Do it. The magic is in the doing. You know, yeah. If I was umming and ahhing, I wouldn't have gotten to where I am right now. I think there's definitely a level of preparation, but at one point you need to set a deadline. And you know what? I'm going to book the ticket. I'm going to do this thing that forces you out of your comfort zone. So go for it and do it.
Absolutely. And what role would you say your identity as a Black man, as a Black woman played in shaping your experiences this trip? Was that even a factor at all? Yeah.
It was a factor. Being Black definitely allowed me to have some more intimate experience than a foreigner would, just because of the privilege of my skin color. You know, I'm not really seen as a foreigner. I'm welcomed a bit more. But even more so, it was important to showcase that, you know, as Black women, I think people say what shocked me the most about the trip. I was shocked that people were still shocked that women do stuff like this. Like we're in 2024, of course we can solo drive across Africa. What is so incredible about that? But obviously we still live in a society that see women having certain roles and it's still this kind of wow. I want to live in a society where someone says she drops, they're like, yeah, women do that, you know, and that will be the change that I hope to see in the nearest future.
And finally, Pelumi, what would you say you learned about yourself during this journey? And how did it change you as a person?
I saw a strength that Pelumi I didn't know she had. You know, I know I've been quite audacious. I know that I've kind of like always stepped out of my comfort zone. But there's this trend that when everybody said it was impossible after my accident, for example, where the car was almost written off, like almost, you know, it was literally had to be put together again. I had to push. I had to be like, you know what they say, when you hit rock bottom, then you crawl up, you know how much strength you have.
Absolutely.
That was amazing to see. And nobody could tell me anything now. I'm just like, I've done the impossible. What next? Let's go for it.
Pelumi, I guess, what is your plan next? What other adventures are you about to embark on now that you've conquered one of the biggest adventures?
We are resting for first of all. We're taking a big exhale. I think as humans, we're very quick to move past our achievements. This was a year plus in planning and then executing. So just take it in, take in the moment, spend time with yourself, take it all in. But I'm an adventurer at heart. You know, I've been to over 80 plus countries. I'm always on the go. I would find something new and adventurous to do. But yeah, right now I'm just taking it one day at a time.
Where are you, first of all? I'm just really interested in
where you are. It's a secret.
You know,
but if you can guess, I would give you something. Are we doing that? Guess the location.
I don't want to be flying from building to building. Like, is that your next adventure?
It's somewhere in the Middle East.
I was going to say that Dubai, whatever. Either way, Pelumi, thank you so much for taking time to chat with us. And congratulations on such a great, great achievement. And hopefully we'll talk again and talk to you about, you know, your next big, big adventure. But take this in.
I will. Thank you so much for having me.
Bye-bye.
That was Nigerian content creator and adventurer Pelumi Nubi.
What's up, Africa? You are listening to Upfront on the Voice of America.
In recent years, the African fashion industry has emerged as a dynamic and influential force on the international stage, captivating audiences with its authenticity, diversity, and creativity. From the runways of Paris and Milan to the bustling markets of Lagos and Nairobi, African designers are making their mark on the global fashion industry. Nigerian fashion designer Mai Atafo tells me that demand for African fashion is being fueled by a growing middle class, increasing urbanization, and a vibrant youth population across the continent.
Of late, we've heard about this fashion boom that is happening on the continent. What would you attribute the drivers of that boom?
I think it's just the recognition of the fact that we can do things to the tastes of our people. And this taste is now obviously globally appealing. So it's almost as good as if you want something done to the highest level of design, you can get that kind of thing done here on the continent. And I think over the years, it's been proven. So that's why I believe that we are engaging more with our creativity as it comes to fashion.
What would you say is the market or unrealized market potential for African fashion industry? And what needs to be done to realize that potential?
I wish I could say this in figures. It would have been nice to say how many billions of dollars is on tap. I don't know.
Hit me with the bees. Okay with that.
I don't know the figures, but if I was just to look at the way we operate on the continent, and knowing that if I make a garment today, it's easier to get it to the UK and the US than it is to get it to Kenya. Just based on that frustration, I want to deal more with, you know, Africans in the UK or in the US or anyone in the UK and the US rather than I deal with someone in Kenya or in South Africa. And that's for multiple reasons. That's first of all because of there's nothing free-flowing within the continent in terms of logistics and transportation. You know, sometimes it's easier to go to Dubai than go to Kenya than it is to go from Lagos to Kenya, in terms of even affordability of the ticket itself. Then, you know, we do not have a standard protocol in terms of how things move into countries on the continent. You know, there's supposed to be AGOA, which makes things easy, but, you know, it exists on paper. When you get to the border, the man there is going to tell you, listen, I'm the one in charge here, and this is what's going to happen, you know? And that has happened to me in Kenya, in Ghana, in Cote d'Ivoire. So I'm speaking from experience, you know?
So realize the potential. So there are all these types of blocks that you face as you're expanding your business, as you're growing your business.
Yes. So I just feel like if we can realize those things and it's easy to transact, that has to tell you the magnitude of the growth in which we could have literally on the continent. And that is untapped as we speak.
Who are the main drivers of this boom? Who are your main customer base?
Well, it's definitely consumers on the continent. It's interesting because the diaspora follow the trend on the continent. They are overseas, but mentally still live on the continent. So they want to be a part of, you know, what's going on here. So in terms of if it's music, if it's movies, or if it's fashion, they want to tap into it. And of late, you know, being African or being Nigerian is such a big, huge deal that even, you know, second, third generation Nigerians have never been here before, can't even speak any language, can barely pronounce their names correctly without an American or British accent, proudly say, I am African, I'm a Nigerian, you know. So that's to tell you that this is where it happens, this is where it starts, and the guys in the diaspora literally just follow whatever trend is happening on here. So it's definitely big here.
Now, the creative economy as a whole is playing a significant role in driving innovation and growth on the continent. How do you see the fashion industry contributing to the broader creative economy in Nigeria, and what opportunities does it present for local talent, for local designers, or people that are working within the fashion or the creative ecosystem?
Very good question. I think within the creative space, there is, you know, there's a lot of growth, and we're seeing a lot of it even turning to like revenue for the parties that play within it, talking about the movies or even the music. And what has also happened, the regularization or the decentralization of music and movies by other players, be it the platforms like digital platforms, be it, you know, the paid for ones, and how you can get music literally by the click of a button, you know, has further helped the creative industry move. But that doesn't work the same way for fashion, unfortunately. You can get your name as fast as they can get the name, but you can't get your goods out there as fast as they can. There are other layers to fashion that makes it almost difficult for you to play like a musician or an actor. And I think that has grossly affected fashion in terms of the creative potential that it could be. And here, there's no platform generally pushing African fashion the way you have platforms that are set to push music or movies, be it locally owned platforms or internationally owned platforms. We do not have that for fashion at all, you know. So it makes it easier, you know, for the Americans to support American fashion designers and push American fashion designers, and the environment makes it even more conducive for them. But you see, once there's a great Burna Boy song, even if you're against it, it's going to get to your neighborhood. Right. And it's going to get there. So you can't even fight that with your association. It's not that the music is good, it hits you. The movie is great, it will get to you, you watch it. You know? Now, the fashion is great, I can still ensure that it doesn't come to me. And I think fashion is a very peculiar situation because it is both creativity, service, and goods. And the goods part of it is what makes it even difficult for it to thrive as much as the other creative industries.
Mm, interesting. Now, when we talk about fashion on the continent, we've had people talk about sustainability as becoming increasingly important in the fashion industry globally, but also, again, on the continent specifically. How does your brand incorporate sustainability in its practices, say from sourcing materials to production to distribution?
Yeah. So I won't, you know, sit here and, you know, sound like a shining star for sustainability on the continent or even in the world in general. Because I first of all believe that someone once said it says sustainability is a foreign problem, because they created the problem that they have to fix it. Because they have the massive clothes they are producing for ridiculous amounts of money. They're the ones pressing the necks of the factories in Asia to do things at a penny and a dime. And they said it for this. And it doesn't sell that they have the problem of trying to fix it. So they create the problem and try to fix the problem. Now, anything in the world that is a lingo will catch on. So sustainability is a lingo. It's a catchphrase. And want to act accordingly here. You know, we know that a portion of those clothes are dumped here in Africa. We can't even wear most of them. Secondhand clothes are brought from overseas and brought to Africa. Then We try to be, but I look at it critically. What have you generated? What is your play in this problem that you're trying to get a solution for? Really? Because I don't think you've provided clothing for Africa in general. We haven't achieved that.
You're listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. We are chatting with Nigerian fashion designer Mai Atafo. He's talking to us about what it takes to build a global fashion brand from Africa.
I want to take you back a little bit to the aspect of quality. You're saying, you know, and it's true, if you buy quality products, you know, if you buy a quality suit, very expensive, you know, it can be quite expensive, but it will take you for so many years. However, for the majority of the continent, they don't quite have the type of resources to buy something that is expensive, and therefore they would rather get something that is secondhand, that is not of good quality. So then how do you balance those two needs? You know what I'm saying? That dilemma of we want quality, but then we can't even afford the quality.
I think I already answered that with my charity sales. So there's the quality, and now you can get it at this price.
Yeah, but this is just you, Ma. It's just not like everybody.
Exactly. Yeah. that's just me. Well, you see, at the other hand, people have different price points for their stuff. I would be able to holistically answer that question, thinking about it, to say, okay, this is the best. Because for you to get the kind of quality you want, you're going to spend money to actually get that kind of quality. Mm. And you can't sell it for a cheap price, you know, because we're trying to run the business and stay alive. So it's a tough one. That is a very tough one.
Okay, let's move on. As I say, I guess I would call you a fashion industry veteran at this point. What advice would you give to an aspiring fashion entrepreneur, particularly those that aim to build, again, a sustainable and socially responsible brand?
Yeah, I think the first things first is that when we still get a lot of people come into the industry and they do it out of, you know, just pure love. I think I can do it because my sister brother is doing it or something like that. But I want us to be able to look at these things, first of all, as a business and try to make it profitable for yourself. That's getting into it. So you're not frustrated, because it's actually more a business. And now I say it's less passion, but more business. So once you're doing it, you're looking at numbers from the beginning. Then you start knowing how to play, where to play, okay? And as you're going into it in the beginning, you have to think of every single parameter that plays. So sustainability is something you should look at even though you're just starting, okay? Digitization oh, wow, is also very important, because that's an easy way to go global, you know, because now the world is a big digital village, you know. Now you have to think of all those companies together. When I started, there was no Instagram. You know, Twitter probably came out a year after I started or something, or just about when I started, you know. So we're never planning to be bigger than Lagos, you know. Mm. That came on us as we grew. But for you coming in right now, you should think global from the get-go. You should think your customers are as far as it gets any part of the world. So, I mean, it's going to be harder, but again, the tools are there for you to be able to act accordingly.
So I guess act local, but think global.
Yes. Yes.
Interesting. You know, empowering the next generation of fashion creatives is really, you know, crucial for the industry's future, especially if there's more demand that is coming from the continent. How does your brand support emerging designers and artisans, the local artisans in Nigeria or Africa as a whole?
Yes. So in particular, Atafo, what we do at Atafo, we have an initiative called Fashion Conversation. And it came out of just me growing and people asking me questions on how I've done what I've done. And I found it very hard to do one-on-one mentorship. So what I did with this platform was literally invite young designers or anyone interested in fashion for a session in my studio. and you register. It's absolutely free, and you come to the studio. Interestingly, when we started out, when we put out registration, we'll get maybe close to, like, you know, 300 registrations over the period that we kind of attend to all of them. So we do segments. We invite them to my studio. We all sit, and the way it works is you ask the questions and I answer the question. Whatever question you have at all in fashion. We have done this in Abuja. We've done it in Lagos. We've taken it to Port Harcourt. We're even taking it to the United Kingdom in a few weeks, because we've heard people saying, you know, we would like to learn. And it's a very, very authentic class, and it comes from my experience. The shortest time we have done in any of those classes is 5 hours.
Wow.
And the five, you have to go because it's taking too long. The last one, the one before last we did in Lagos, we had to do it over 2 weekends because we got oversubscribed. So we did it on a Saturday. The next Saturday, we did it again. And after that, we went to Abuja to have another session. Okay, we've done one again in Lagos this year. We're going to do one in London in a couple of weeks. Then when we come back, we want to take it to Abuja and Port Harcourt, you know. Now the scale is getting bigger. I'm getting some sponsorship and partnership from brands that are trying to help me deliver this. It's going to give birth to something I want to call Fashion Entrepreneurship Day, which is going to be a full day dedicated to this, where I'll call my friends in and have segmentation. We segment the different classes for what you're interested in. We have the general hall where people can speak generally. Then we break into different smaller groups, but it's going to be like a whole day thing where you actually just pay, you register, and you pick which class you're interested in going to, and we do that. Because I realize
little master classes.
Yes, are coming on board and they're doing the same thing. So why don't we make this a really big one? And if we do it once every quarter, it'll be great. So that's my current initiative. That's what I want to do. And that's what I want to grow it into, because the knowledge that they require to run things in Africa is not in any book, to be honest. It's in the heads
of
really
those like done. Creating a playbook from the beginning.
Yes. Yes. It's in our failures and our successes. And, you know, gladly, we are open to sharing that with the next generation.
And with that, we come to the end of our show today. Many thanks to all our guests and to you, our listeners, for tuning in, whether you tuned in through our FM stations or our shortwave stations around the world or online at voaafrica.com. Remember to connect with us on our social media platforms. Just search for VOA Africa on Instagram and on Facebook. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Let's connect again same time next week. Have a great week ahead, Africa.
VOA Africa has a wide variety of programs for you. News, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, television, and the internet on voaafrica.com.
Hello, this is Macquarie, Managing Editor of Africa 54 TV Show. As the world celebrates the International Tea Day, some tea enthusiasts from across the world are in Kenya to learn about and experience Kenyan tea. For this and more, tune in on your local TV station at 16:30 UTC. This week on Straight Talk Africa, we're discussing the withdrawal of the U.S. forces from Niger and Chad. How is this going to affect the role of the United States in the Sahel? Join me, Vincent McCorry, on the next Straight Talk Africa Wednesday at 18:30 UTC.